last week we talked about the whole build, market, sell paradigm has been busted big time. And now it's a market, sell, build, market. I would call it it's a cycle now. It's not a linear system. It's a constant cyclical rotary device, if you will.
Exactly right. Yeah, I mean, there's lots of us that have talked about this in a cyclical format, the loyalty loop, Andrew Davis. I mean, there's lots of ideas. And, you know, McKinsey, I believe, has come out with their versions of these things. But it's the total concept of, all right, so let's take one step back. I told you we did a lot of research on the high performers. You want to know what the number one key trait of all high-performing marketing organizations is?
Yes, I would love to know that.
Good. I'm so glad you took the bait. So what it is, it's not that they have better anything. It's not that they follow different people. The reality is it's the executives have just bought into a new idea of marketing where they see marketing as the sum of all experiences across the customer journey, not the creator of messages to drive net new business. Growth happens a radically different way, right? If we only expect marketing to pump new leads into the business and the business then is going to continue forward and grow, that's not the way businesses grow. What we see is marketing is now being applied into every aspect of business. Concepts like nurturing, onboarding, lead scoring don't just belong at the very front of the business relationship. They exist through the entire life cycle. Experience goes through everything. Customer experience, user experience, customer advocacy, all these are experiences that we must focus on. So that's the number one key trait is experience.
You literally wrote the book on market automation. I mean, market automation for dummies. Literally, that came out when?
7 years ago.
Yeah, so you were involved in marketing automation pretty early on when it comes to where people are certainly now. And it sounds to me you're not necessarily disavowing anything that you've written at all. It's just that you're evangelizing a new framework based on the research you've done and is outlined deeply in the book that you got to think about marketing differently. But you've also got to change the structure of your business to match the change game that is now out there as outlined in the Context Marketing Revolution, the book that is now available.
Yeah, so definitely been in the I don't know what word you want to use, but the bleeding edge of marketing for a long time. I'm employee 13 at a company called Pardot. You know, we were one of the first marketing automation platforms, wrote the first essentially complete book on marketing automation from a tactical perspective. And the hardest part on writing that book was that the editors didn't understand that this wasn't just a new marketing technology, that it's a new way of thinking about marketing, period, right? It's not that we got new ways or easier ways of doing old things. No, we got exposed to radically new possibilities that simply didn't exist before, right? So what would happen is you give someone who's an email marketer a marketing automation tool, they just automate all the stuff that they used to be doing. They didn't first say, wow, these are new possibilities. Maybe I should think about new things, right? And so that's one of the big things I tried to emphasize in that book was, you know, we must think about new ways, not just moving these old things forward because these are new possibilities. That was one of the big ideas. So automation is a key factor. These ideas of context require automation to scale. And automation is a foundational aspect of any business moving forward. It just has to be, right? Because when we start talking about personal interaction and personal connection, that requires automation for those things to happen. Whether that is us creating a dynamic experience. So let's go pretty far out into the future. Let's talk about headless commerce, right? This idea that you won't even be building website front ends in the future. You'll just be building back ends with metadata on assets. And depending on who lands and what moment in the context, a front end of a website will pop up, right? It's called headless. Right? And so we already see a lot of e-commerce sites moving that way. And that's all automation. And there's no way to do that without. It's a simple reason as to why we'd want to do that, right? Is every person that comes to the website going for the same reason? The answer is no. They all come for different reasons. And if we can meet them in that context, we can drive radically different business results. Great example, Room and Board. Room and Board took their website and just did one step. They said, we're just going to use AI to make sure that every person that comes to the website sees exactly what they're looking for. And that one simple change, in the first month, it increased online sales by 50%. That was a net increase in revenue of $700,000 per month, just simply by making that one little change, right? So automation is a massive factor moving forward. But how we use it, we need to start thinking about how we connect humans to other humans, right? Maybe we should start thinking about, hey, listen, rather than me firing off this email, maybe I need to have a human, either advocate, someone outside an extension of the brand, or an employee engage with this person in some type of contextual way. Rather than me just simply emailing that white paper, maybe I could have one of them at mention them in the comment section of the blog where the white paper is and saying, hey, you might really enjoy this. Firing off a notification, you know, going to the front of their home screen, right? There's different ideas we can think about, different games we can play.
Yeah, well, and the first part is to understand the different games' rules. And some of those, as I said last week, some of those rules are yet to be discovered and defined because it's still a very dynamic thing. If anyone says there's one right way to do anything, I laugh because what's true today is changed a second later. But there are certain trends, certain things, certain developments in marketing for not only your small business, your large business, or your individual brand that you need to be aware of. And one of those is, you've already mentioned it once or twice already, and that is AI. Now, a lot of us think that AI was either a kind of bad Spielberg movie or, you know, the robots overlords are coming to turn us into serfs and mine our electric energy, like as a battery in the Matrix or something like that. And you're saying on page 6 of the introduction that AI, well, number one, AI comes in a lot of different forms. And by the way, many of them are already here and you engage with them on a daily basis and you don't mind one little bit. What do you mean when you're talking about AI? It's a big catch-all bucket for everything from Fitbit alerts to anticipating that if I go to the Fender website, they're going to put up acoustic guitars first because they have gotten enough information about me to know that I'm an acoustic guitar player rather than an electric. That doesn't mean they aren't going to serve me up electric, but the front page I'm coming to is going to be custom made for me, the primarily acoustic guitar playing guitar player.
Yeah. So let's dive into this concept of AI. Now, we're not going to get into too deep in AI, right? There's, like you said, there's lots of aspects to it. What people need to realize is just these two basic sides. When we think about AI from a business standpoint, oftentimes businesses say, how do I use AI to improve my business? How do I use AI to create better experiences? How is AI going to transform my business? Very rarely does the other side of the conversation ever come into their head. How has AI already transformed their consumer, right? So the thing we need to realize is we are all post-AI consumer. We never signed up to use AI, right? But we signed up to use the digital world. Now, how does the digital world become better for us? It gets empowered by AI, right? And so now we have a post-AI consumer. Think about any digital platform. Doesn't matter. Google, they're completely one of the largest AI infrastructures on the planet. And what is it designed to do? It's designed so that when you ask a question, a contextual answer comes up. AI defines that context. Look at any social media feed, right? They're not chronological feeds. Artificial intelligence realizes there is way too much content for me to just simply give you everything that your friends post. So what does it do? AI filters it into a contextual feed. Look at the timestamps. And you want to take that one step further? Go look at TikTok. It has no timestamp. Why? So it can be even more contextual. So you don't say, oh, this is an old thing. This was posted 3 days ago. It doesn't matter when. It matters the context of now. What are you trying to get out of this moment? And that can engage with you best. Hence, it's a contextual feed. Email is the same. Just look at any aspect of the digital world. And so we had this post-AI consumer. And what that has done is it's changed their expectations. We already talked about the buyer's journey, how now all things are considered purchases because they can be. But yeah, AI has radically changed the consumer, what they want and how we interact with them.
This episode of the Nonfiction Brand Podcast is brought to you by Nonfiction Brandversity. It's a free Facebook group dedicated to the art and craft of personal branding. And we'd like to invite you. Just search Nonfiction Brandversity on Facebook and ask to join. You're in, guaranteed. I can't wait to see you on campus. Wow, there's so much in this book that I find fascinating. And, you know, there are a lot of implications on tactical execution that can come out of this. But I would love for you to point to a handful of things that the active individual, the active small business person who wants to build their business or their personal brand, how can they take this kind of new paradigm shift that you're talking about and actually capitalize upon it in the way they approach how they enter the market or share their journey?
Yeah, great. So I would say there's a couple of basic things. Step number one is you need to know what your buyer's journey is. I mean, most businesses don't have a mapped out buyer's journey. And the reality is you have to, because if you don't have it mapped out, you're not going to know where you need to be and what the context of that's going to be. So here's how you do it. Find your customers, either prospective or actual customers, and you just need to sit down and have a conversation with them. In fact, Adele Ravella, I think I got her last name correct, on the Buyer Persona Institute, she wrote a book called Buyer Personas. I'd highly suggest reading that book if you want to know how to do this correctly. But you need to understand how they buy, where they're going, and specifically what questions they're asking. And then what are they thinking and feeling and doing in each one of those moments, right? Now, this may seem like a lot of work and it may be complicated, and you may not need to do it because you may already know a couple of basic things. If you're a small business, they're probably going to ask a couple of basic questions. You know, what's this, you know, restaurant near me, you know, dry cleaner close to me? Like, they'll ask these basic questions. You need to make sure that you are asking those same questions and making sure that you show up in those answers. That's pretty basic, number one, right? Then make sure you understand the rest of that journey. Why do customers stay with you? Why are they happy? Making sure you're then doing those things, such as, you know, once they've purchased from you, do you follow back up with them? Do you have a nurturing journey to get them from customer one to repeat customer, right? These are some basic ideas and examples. The second thing I would say is to make sure that we realize that the highest apex of direct marketing is not one-to-one, it's human-to-human, right? So one-to-one was created, by the way, it was created by Don Peppers and Martha Rogers in their book, Future of One-to-One, which I think came out in 93. So that was a while ago. But that's what talked about one-to-one, right? And it was at the very forefront of the digital transformation of just digital, right? Moving from analog to digital. And so the concept was, if I can create one brand message and deliver that to one individual, that's the apex of direct marketing. And I would say, nay, that is the apex of one-to-one of what we could do, right? But go back to that. What is the highest value of the digital world? It's not publication, it's interaction, right? So what goes past one brand message to one individual? Well, one human engaging with another human on the brand's behalf, right? Because when a brand tells you something, you react very differently than when your friend tells you something. We've known this forever, word of mouth. This is just digital word of mouth. This is how this happens. Now then, back into all the big things that we know, influencer marketing, social media, right? These are all aspects of one human engaging with another. So make sure that you then realize the power of human to human, right? Now, this then is a very tactical use case. You need to make sure that you're asking those humans to leave reviews because that's how people care, right? If they see your site and they say, oh, you've only got 3 stars. I hate to break it to you. Fix that before you do anything else because no one's coming to you if you have 3 stars. You could spend, and here's a really funny example, right? Kmart back 4 years ago launched this amazing campaign called Ship Your Pants, Ship My Pants, right?
That's right, right.
Yeah, you remember? So the old couple, one leans over to the next and says, hey, honey, I just shipped my pants, right? It's real funny. Right. So they spend all this money. I'm in Chicago. I see it on YouTube. It's like, this is pretty cool. You know, you guys know what I do. I do a lot of research, focus on this stuff. So anyways, I tried to go find what's the local Kmart to go test this out. So I'm not from Chicago. So what do I do is I go online, type in Google, or, you know, go to Google, type in, you know, Kmart. And, you know, the 3 locations near me pop up. What else pops up? All the ratings and reviews for those locations, which was an average of 2.9.
Yeah.
So how many millions of dollars did they just spend to drive me to bad reviews where I'm now no longer going to that store? And then I went to the website and their website was broken, right? So the point being is make sure that the key aspects of the journey are fixed before you start driving people to them. And one of those is, you know, people are going to be asking those questions. Make sure you have ratings and reviews there. The second aspect is don't engage with those ratings, right? If it's a positive rating, you don't need to say thank you. If you want to say thank you, write them a personal note and send it to them in the mail. The reason why? It's because if you engage with those reviews, other people see that you are trying to mess with the rating and review, and now you become disingenuous as a brand, right? So don't do it on there. Take it offline. If it's a bad review, you need to reply to it because that's then going to show people how you deal with scenarios, right? So be positive, you know, be helpful. But with positive ones, just write them a personal note. So those two basic ideas, I think just everyone could do, I mean, kind of be better off at.
Yeah, well, one of the things that I preach constantly is that every communication you have is a demonstration of who you are, what you do, and how you do it. And it's an opportunity to actually change people's minds in a very positive way. So like you mentioned, dealing with negative reviews, I was talking to somebody who said, should I just ignore it? And I said, no, you should engage with it in a way that is absolutely true to who you are, what you do, and how you do it. with an open heart and open ears and an open mind. The worst thing you can do is come back with flame, you know, because that's just a huge mistake. But if you take someone who's flaming at you and say something like, well, I'm so sorry that this happened. Can we talk about this? I would like to make this right. Do you know what happens to the people who are watching what they expect to be a flame war happen? All of a sudden they go, oh my God, I'm on your side, not their side, because you're trying to do the right thing. We're all human beings. We know things happen that are a mistake. And the fact that you try to fix it is huge.
Very much so. It was the whole idea of brand, right? So many people try to spend all this money on creating, you know, the perfect logo, on the perfect look. Now, yes, a lot of those things have to do with brand, right? You know, the things that happen in a place give that place its feeling, its name, its brand. But at the same time, exactly right to your point, right? Your brand is the sum of all experiences someone has with you, right? And that's a major experience. How they see how you deal with things, that is the brand. That is how they're going to assume you're going to deal with them.
Yeah. There's a section header in your book on page 33 that says very simply, how will marketers succeed? Through experiences, not messages. And I think that's kind of summing up what you've just been talking about. But I want to give you an example of how I interpret what you're saying here. Now, if you're involved in marketing and social media and all that stuff, everyone will point to Wendy's as having a great Twitter feed. You know, they have very funny, very apropos, very emerging topics are folded in a wonderful way. It has a tone of voice. It has a style. It makes Wendy, if there is such a thing as Wendy, seem like a really fun person that you would love to know. Well, then you walk into a Wendy's and it's staffed by, you know, underpaid minimum wage workers, half of whom don't really have any interest in giving you a great customer experience. So to me, that's a place where the message is great, but the experience is subpar. I don't want to be too harsh on Wendy's because I do love their burgers. I'm just saying. But that's kind of what you're talking about, right? You're saying,
exactly right.
You know, Wendy's can say, we're great, we're great, we're great. But if you're not, guess who gets to determine whether you're great? I do. I'm your customer.
Compare that with Chick-fil-A, right?
Yeah.
Chick-fil-A has been running the same ad campaign for a decade or more. And they just, I think, decided to change it last year. But beside the point, walk into a Chick-fil-A. They pay their employees more. It's always clean. You're always going to have an amazing experience. They've gone so far as to put people, once again, human to human, they put people outside taking your order. You're not talking to a box. You're going to talk to a human who's going to take your order on an iPad and look you in the face, right? Now, they're much more profitable, and they even give more money away to charity, and they charge more for their product, right?
And
they don't have all that on Twitter.
And they aren't open on Sundays.
Oh, yeah, I forgot.
No, and this is what I lived down in Atlanta one day, and I'm driving around. I see a Chick-fil-A, and I want a Chick-fil-A sandwich. I drive up and empty parking lot, and oh, they're closed. Well, guess what? That's part of their brand. It's part of who they are. And let me tell you, Chick-fil-A is not universally beloved, but they are universally, I think, recognized as authentic to who they are, what they do, and how they do it. And the experience that you get there really reflects exactly what you're talking about. Their experience matches my expectations. Consequently, I'm a customer.
Yeah.
Hey, nonfiction branders, did you know I wrote a book? Well, I did, and it's called Rotoma, the ROI of Social Media Top of Mind. I wrote it with my colleague Spencer X. Smith, and it's all about Rotoma, an acronym that means Return on Top of Mind Awareness. Best-selling author and NYU Stern School of Business professor Scott Galloway called it a book that starches the fluff from social media and helps managers allocate capital and find the unicorn among unicorns, ROI. And Chief Content Officer at Marketing Profs, Anne Hanley, said, this isn't just a practical way to think about the return on social media. It's also a spot-on, accurate way to reframe your social efforts. Check out all the 5-star reviews on Amazon by searching Rotoma, ROTOMA. Pick up your copy today and start building your personal, professional, and small business brand the Rotoma way. Once again, I want to let people know about the ways that they can get in touch with you. Matthew, are you active on social media? Is there specific feeds that you might want to guide people to see what you're doing?
Yeah, I use LinkedIn a good bit. So you can follow me on LinkedIn. You can also follow me on Twitter, which is just M. Sweezy. If you read that real fast, that's right. I accidentally chose Miss Wheezy as my Twitter handle. So those are the two places that you can reach me the easiest.
And I will say that Matthew spells his name with one T. That's M-A-T-H-E-W. I noticed that after I sent you out a calendar invite. Sorry. And Sweezy.
I appreciate you saying that.
Yeah, no problem. And Sweezy is spelled S-W-E-E-Z-E-Y. Or as my friends in Australia and Britain would say, S-W-E-E-Z-E-Y. Again, what a treat to have you on the podcast. I really want to recommend that people check out his brand new book, Context Marketing Revolution. It's being published by Harvard Business Review Press, which is very impressive if you ask me. And the reviews that I've seen thus far are stellar. Everything I've read in the book is really got me chewing. I mean, this is a nutrient-rich meal that you've created here, Chef Sweezy. And I really appreciate it. If you are a professional marketer, you need to read the book. If you are a personal branding oriented individual, I think there's tons of value in here as well, because it's going to make you think about the game differently. I want to give you an example of that that just happened yesterday. My friend, I'm shouting out to you, Dan Rowe, finally posted something on LinkedIn. Applause for Dan Rowe, right? Well, he's finally understood that social media is a place where you should engage if you're a professional. Dan, you need to read this book because it's going to change the way you think about the game. The game has changed. Matthew makes a compelling argument about how that game has changed and how you can benefit from it. And the cool thing here is, just like my friend Mark Schaefer, it's not just big ideas. He shows the math. So if you're one of those people who likes to have things proven, not just opined, this book is for you. It's called Context Marketing Revolution by Matthew Sweezy. Once again, for the Nonfiction Brand Podcast, I am DP Knutton, and he is...
Miss Wheezy, only on Twitter.
Miss Wheezy, Matthew Sweezy. I'll talk to you guys next time. Bye-bye.